Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 66. The original series, season 2, episode 15. The Trouble with Tribbles.
Jim, I think I've got it. All we have to do is quit feeding them. We quit feeding them, they stop breeding.
Now he tells me.
Yep. This Tribble is dead. And so are these.
A lot of them are dead. A lot of them are alive. But they won't be for long.
The logical assumption is that there is something in the grain.
Yeah. Bones, I want the Tribbles, the grain, everything analyzed. I want to know what killed these Tribbles.
I haven't figured out what keeps them alive yet. All right, if I find out anything, I'll let you know.
That isn't going to do you any good, Kirk. This project is ruined, and Starfleet is going to hear about it. And when they do, they will have a board of inquiry, and they will roast you alive.
Yes,
and I am going to be there, Kirk, to enjoy every minute of it.
Yes, until that board of inquiry, I'm still a captain. And as captain, I want two things done. First, find Cyrano Jones. And second... Close that door.
So do you want to start the podcast now? We've done our verbal exercises.
The trouble with the
verbal exercises have concluded.
I'm still doing
mine. We're in the process, but we'll get there by the time we end the introduction of the podcast. So welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast. This is episode 66, I believe. Mm-hmm. Am I correct about that, gentlemen?
I think so. That's my count, yes. 66. Right.
I don't know.
That's good. So I will. I believe it is episode 66. This irrelevant information to the audience, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Partly because it's in the title.
It's just a number.
It's on the screen as their podcast is playing. They'll see that. But it is episode 66. And in episode 66, we are discussing The Trouble with Tribbles, which is the original series. Season 2, episode 15, if my recollection remains accurate, and if Memory Alpha and IMDb and all that
That's
stuff
what
too.
I
get so frustrated when there's a conflict between different sources as to what the episode number is. I do not believe that is the case this week. But in prior times, like, Deep Space Nine, for example, sometimes it's a two episode, sometimes it's one. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And this episode aired in 67 on December 29th.
Which is interesting because when we're growing up, and largely today, I mean, I know it's the streaming world, but I can't they didn't usually have stuff on in like late December, new shows.
Right, yeah.
That's weird,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think, but like in the 60s, they did just like a ton of episodes all the time.
I guess they were just always throwing stuff on
TV. It was like year round.
Yeah. Pretty fucking intense.
Putting those people to work.
Yeah, but like people like David Gerald,
yeah,
who wrote this episode.
That's right.
When were seasons? When did they used to be when we were kids?
Seasons? They would end in...
They would start in fall, right?
Late November, early December. It depended because it changed over time because they started doing more Christmassy stuff.
Well, I mean, when did they start? That's when they started. No, that's
oh no.
When,
the, oh, I saw. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, the I was thinking of the hiatus starting. Yeah.
Oh,
September-ish, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
There was like fall. You know, the fall is when new shows would come out, and you get still do that, but
you get aggravated when shows would be they wouldn't start until like October or something because of some sort of sports.
Yeah, like the Olympics or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happened to King of the Hill a lot.
And then they did the summer seasons.
Seinfeld.
Remember, they had summer seasons where they had TV shows that were like,
yeah.
they had shorter seasons, but they were summer seasons.
So you say it only went from September till November, December?
No, there was a hiatus.
Weren't they talking about
for the holidays?
Weren't they talking about some time of year where it's like they show all these new shows and test them out? And,
yeah, the sweeps. They
sweeps.
Have fall sweeps and spring sweeps.
Spring
that was for all the network stuff.
So
when they
I feel
would count the ratings extra closely for some reason then.
Yeah, I feel like the season started up again after a certain... Yeah, there was new episodes. So it wasn't just, it used to be that there would be one block of new episodes a year.
I think it's what we're, this all stems from the fact that we find it peculiar that there was a brand new episode on December 29th. But I guess it was just, there was a period where there was less of a holiday hiatus. Mm.
Holiday hiatus.
I mean, I don't know if there'd be a new episode of Star Trek like on December 25th.
They did what needed to be done.
Yeah, gotta pump out that TV. Gotta sell color TVs with brightly colored TV shows like Star Trek, the original series.
Kirk was wearing his green shirt. Speaking of colors,
Kirk was.
Sometimes he's got that funny green shirt on. Sometimes it's like the more standard gold kind of command shirt. Yeah, I like that green shirt. It's kind of funny looking.
Spock said "sensor" when he was, and they went to DSK-7.
Yeah,
Spock said a lot of things this episode.
Yeah, he's just real smartass. Like how he denies that he finds Tribbles cute at one point. Yeah. And then he's all distracted when they're talking to him. He's like, "Oh." Yeah, the deep space K-7, it looked really cool. I know it's all redone and stuff,
but close to the original. They really did just upgrade the original.
It's got this classic sci-fi look of sort of emptiness, mm-hmm. but at the same time, just this. It feels so grand somehow.
The struts and the pods, and you have to sort of bubbly and weird. Yeah, and you have to kind of imagine where the people. And we don't see much of the station. There's the bar, mm-hmm. right, and
there's the cozy little transporter,
the office. The office of the head of the station, I guess. Lurie, I believe was his name. Yeah. And then you have those things where you got to presume those must be where the Quadro Triticale or other goods are stored.
Quadro Triticale.
Quadro Triticale.
The running gag of Kirk, who is known to be a highly intelligent, highly educated person, having no knowledge of Quadro Triticale was funny.
Well, he's from Iowa, so he just knows like corn and hogs. He doesn't know about wheat.
He doesn't know about alternate grains.
Yeah, yeah, and Chekhov spent some time just saying like, yeah, they invented in Russia. And they're like, are you sure, man? And then he's like, oh yeah, Quadro Triticale.
So
Quadro Triticale. And so even like Chekhov knew.
Is Russian invention. One thing I wanted to talk about was that this is obviously and famously a comedic episode. And it is an episode that people often point to when they're trying to combat some of the more silly criticism of other comedic Star Trek episodes. They're like, I don't want Star Trek to be funny. It's like, come on. You know, the original series did it. That means we can keep doing it.
Yeah.
But it has this weird backdrop, this like Cold War backdrop of the Klingons and the Federation. And the premise of the plot, it's fairly straightforward, but the premise requires the audience to understand some basic geopolitical stuff about the importance of, in empire building, in obtaining settlements and planting food and demonstrating that you can work, you know. And I found it interesting because presumably it would be no problem for the audience at this time in the middle of the 60s to have some idea of the analogy here of to the real world Cold War events between the US and Russia. But kind of underneath that, the season two is when they introduce Chekhov. And I want to know what you thought about this, because on the one hand, they introduced Chekhov because Gene Roddenberry, similar to what he did with Worf in The Next Generation, wanted to show that in the future, your greatest enemy could become your ally. And so they put a Russian on the ship, right? Great idea. Somewhat undercut by the fact that they make this Russian guy keep being like, oh, he's invented in Russia.
Yeah, right.
And they're all like, you're stupid. That was a British white dude.
Oh, yeah, like Ivan Berkhoff. No, John Burke.
Ivan Berkhoff. It's just a little weird, though, isn't it?
Oh, the Royal Academy. Well,
I mean, I guess you do what you can do, given that maybe the producers, the studio was like, you can have a Russian, but only if you make him look like a monkey. You know those monkeys? Yeah. That Davy Jones character?
Well, there was like the characters in the first episode of the women being on the bridge and stuff, which was forward thinking, but then...
And the cage, and the unaired pilot, and then they took him away.
So, I'm not used to a woman on the bridge. After that, they were just making coffee.
Yeah, but I guess the one with the Russian is a little bit more ridiculous, because it is kind of like this kind of funny laugh at this guy who says his V's all wrong, you know?
Yeah.
And so his character kind of went on like that, like, pretty much.
And Kirk later in the episode after the fight scene, which we'll talk about, classic fight scene.
Yeah, it was
but,
good.
But Kirk immediately assumes it was Chekhov who has the hot head. Yeah. Now you could say it's because he's young, but I don't know. I just, more than I've seen this episode a quadrillion times, and I never really thought about the fact that I was like, you know, they're being kind of be rude to.
It seems more natural that the Scottish guy is starting to fight. I mean, throwing the first punch and getting all pissed off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that seems more in line with our what we're normally used to seeing. Yeah,
the stereotype.
And he had drank a big tall glass of scotch too. That was a lot of scotch that he had in there.
Yeah, that was a big
calling vodka soda pop.
Yeah, there was a classic sort of that. Vodka versus whiskey debate.
It was something your grandma's juice or something. I can't remember the quote. It was weird.
Oh, some old lady in Leningrad. That was for the. Call it Leningrad in the future.
They call it
St. Petersburg.
That was when they were talking shit about the scotch.
Yeah.
Maybe what Star Trek was telling us is that they're going to rename it Leningrad. Yeah, it's not outside of the realm of possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Scott goes, when are you going to get off that milk diet, lad? And then Chekhov goes, this is vodka. And he goes, where I come from, that's soda pop.
Yeah, right.
This is a drink for a man, holding up the scotch. Scotch? And Scotty's like, aye. Chekhov goes, it was invented by a little old lady from Leningrad. And then that's when Korax has to start shit for some reason, because you never know. Like, you know, what was the other guy's name? Koloth.
So Koloth is the commander, and we see him in the future. He's on Deep Space Nine. Mm. He's in that Blood Oath episode with Dax. He's one of the people who comes back, Koloth.
So you wonder if he wanted to start this fight, really, and he just told Korax to do it, or if, I guess it doesn't really matter. It's just the Klingons.
Being Klingons.
Do you think they were just being Klingons, or do you think it was an intimidation thing to try to like, you know...
I never honestly thought about it. It's possible.
Planet Sherman. How many planets or Sherman's planet? That's what it is.
Sherman's
that's even
planet.
When, yeah. How many? How many planets have the word planet after them? You know,
it is an odd name, and I honestly forgot to look it up because I wanted to see
Planet Mars.
It feels to me like it's an analogy to something, and I'm sure there
are. Mars's planet.
Yeah, but
it's not someone's planet.
It reminds me of something in the back of my brain, and I bet an audience member is one or more audience members are
their lives?
Scratching their eyes out.
I thought you were going to bet their lives,
and I'm not going to bet their lives. I mean, I might. I might if there was a scenario. Which I could leverage the lives of our listeners for my own benefit. I'd like to think I wouldn't,
but
I try to be an honest puck. But Sherman's planet feels like it was based off of something else in the real world. And that's what I'm saying that our listeners, somebody out there will probably know.
I think there's some stars that are somebody's star, or at least maybe they...
Barnard's star.
There's Barnard's star, yeah. Right.
Mm, could be from that. I was just wondering if it was a geopolitical thing. Anyway, and Sherman evokes ideas of, you know, like General Sherman.
Yeah. Mm.
I don't know if that's on purpose or not. We're so far removed from the 60s that I think some of these potential little references... Like when you watch an old... episode of Monty Python, and half the jokes you can't get because they're making fun of local politicians from the 60s and 70s.
Maybe it was Sherman Hemsley.
Mm.
Maybe someone gets a whole planet because in the future planets aren't that significant or something.
Yeah, right. There's a bunch of planets. Yeah,
that's Sherman's planet.
Some of them stars have, like, you know, several habitable planets somehow. Somehow that works.
Some of those stars. Some of those stars are some of my best friends. Some of those stars. I got nothing against brown dwarfs.
You know those stars. You know.
So, and then the fight starts. And I did the timestamps, and it was about 2 minutes for the whole fight, which is a long time. And that's what I like about... One thing I liked about this episode is... So I like... When I remember back to this episode, it's been so long since I see it. I remember Tribbles, of course, but sort of like forget all the stuff around it. And there's actually, like you were saying, with the backdrop of the what you call it?
Cold War.
Cold War backdrop. Thank you. And then, yeah, just there's a whole story going around with that. And the Tribbles are sort of like involved directly, but sort of on the side as well. So there's, I'd forgotten how much was going on with the episode, and I really liked that because it was in depth. Some of these things about these episodes of Star Trek, and maybe it's because they have six extra minutes or whatever, but A 2 minute bar brawl is a long time, I think. And then they have time to do other stuff. Like there's the joke where that Cyrano Jones is like talking to the barman, you know, and saying like, "Hey, you want to buy another one?" This is after they've already sort of spread around, and he just keeps picking up.
Yeah, I know. I like that.
Yeah, Tribbles over and over, and it keeps going, and it keeps going, and it's to that point where you're like, okay, should they cut? Like, no, just keep going. Do it. Yeah. And then they took the time to do the joke, and it was effective.
That's sort of a more old school TV thing to take so much time with it like that.
The fight scene was so well, it was very well choreographed.
Yeah,
From the start. I want to know how long those dudes had to practice that whole get up out of your chair and fling it behind you all slick.
Yeah.
They all did it perfectly.
Yeah, that was a probably one of the best Star Trek like fight scenes of all time.
Do you think that they learned that chair trick for this scene, or do you think that those people just all had prior bar fight experience and so had already had that in their tool bag to get up and sling their chair way back and make it look cool and not look silly? I guarantee you, if I jumped up right now and slung my chair back, I would look like a fool and I'd probably trip over it.
Yeah, I would guess that there's stage combat classes. Yeah. And there's probably a repertoire of moves they teach you.
Chair jitsu,
because a lot of those guys would have done sort of action kind of stuff, like western kind of things. Yeah. Or crime shows, and you know, that kind of stuff.
Like there's ways to flip people and stuff. By the way, it was awesome when that one dude, like, he flipped him over top of his back, and then another dude jumped him from behind and he gave him like a hip toss over front. That dude was a badass. But but like there's certain ways I think they teach you to do, you know, hip tosses and things like that, and there's certain moves about throwing people over tables and stuff. But you know, it's not Daredevil. It doesn't have some choreographer, and you wonder how far those choreographers, when they get crazy, like how far they take you out of it, and who choreographed this? I don't know. Like, that's a good question. But I would guess that it was probably somewhere in their moveset already. That's what I would think.
Part of what makes it such a great fight too is not just the actual fight choreography, but the added charm and comedy they add into it. The chair thing is kind of that, but the whole thing with Cyrano Jones. Okay, first
the
bar guy just dips the fuck out.
Yeah,
the bar guy is like, I don't want to be part of this. Or maybe he's gonna go get help. Either way, he dips out. Cyrano Jones goes back and just starts stealing alcohol,
and he's just laughing.
But the part of the scene that I like, because you're right, Dan, it's all one scene basically. The part I like the best is when Cyrano Jones is holding the wine up and he's trying to navigate through the people fighting. They're all getting really close to him, and he's not managing to spill. He gets to the door and the bartender grabs the drink
calmly,
out of his hand.
And it's calmly like it was like I expected that to happen.
So
right
there, the joke is done and it's great, and that's brilliant. And then they make it genius by then he just pulls an entire glass out of his pocket.
Right.
An open glass of wine just right out of one of his giant ass pockets.
He's got that sneaky pocket thing he's wearing.
He's all about the pockets.
Sneaky space pockets.
And it's all like falling off. Like,
yeah, at the end when he was trying to clean up those Tribbles, it's like, you gotta get a better bag, man.
Yeah.
Like, you can't clean up Tribbles like that. But was that supposed to be Klingon blood wine or something? Because I guess we saw what the Federation was drinking, and
there was one of the Federation guys, the meathead looking guy.
Oh yeah, he was.
So another peculiar thing about this episode is it's somewhat unusual in that, in especially in older Star Trek, almost always somebody dies. And of course, there's the whole red shirt phenomenon. But in this case, Scotty, Chekhov, and some dude with a thick neck that we've never seen before sit down to have this drink, and I only retroactively did I realize, oh, that guy with the thick head and thick neck, he's got to be like a stunt guy. I mean, these are all stunt guys, and so they needed to have a stunt guy there to be ready to fight. I'm guessing DeForest Kelly was like, I'm done doing westerns. I'm not going to be part of that bar fight. I'm studying Tribbles right now.
Studying Tribbles.
It was like Kirk's. I think it was Kirk's stunt double, right?
Oh, was
That's
it?
That's what I read, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think that makes sense. He's also the guy who O'Brien replaces in Trials and Tribulations, the Deep Space Nine episode where they go back in time and participate in the events of this.
Yeah,
so
that's a fun one. So after the fight, Kirk starts dressing him down. Keep in mind, this is Stardate 4525.6.
I'll keep that in mind.
The episode began...
I wasn't keeping that in mind, but...
Oh, well, you know, at your leisure.
Hold on, can I type that out?
Well... The opening Stardate, Captain's Log Stardate, was 4523.3. And then after the fight, it was 4525.6. So that means it's 2.3 stardate measurements ahead. So how much do you think 2.3 stardates are?
I never learned enough about
that. You can ask that question to the internet, and they'll give you a couple different systems of calculation.
I felt bad. So years ago, children out there, before the internet,
There was calligraphy, and there was Roman numerals.
After calligraphy and Roman numerals, but prior to the internet, the way we nerds got online, quote unquote online, was we would log on to BBSs, bulletin board systems. Some of us also ran BBSs. Some of the people on this podcast, a majority of the people on this podcast, ran BBSs for many years. Back in the day, when we were young and pretending to be old.
Yes.
However, on some of these BBSs, there were games, door games. And there was one particular door game. Honestly, I think the main way I accessed this was probably not even through BBSs. It was probably through Telnet. Again, a precursor to the internet, text-based. But they were basically multiplayer role-playing games. And one of them was Star Trek-based. And I really wanted to play it, but to play it, you had to, you know, sort of prove yourself and start out as an ensign or an enlisted person or whatever.
Did they call those MUDs or whatever?
Yeah, MUDs, multi-user dimension or something, yeah, multi-user, whatever. They were called MUDs, you're correct. But to advance in Starfleet, you had to learn all these text commands and math about transferring energy around. And I remember the stardates being one that you had to like have a handle on how the stardates worked, because your job might be to log the stardates for your particular crew on, you know, cause you're going to be like the lame person to start until you work your way up and get promoted by some captain. And you only find out later that it's just some dude out in Saskatchewan who has a stick up his ass. And he's never going to promote you.
Shapoopataki.
Saskatoon,
Saskatchewan.
Albuquerque. Did you say that already?
That's in America.
It's in New Mexico.
Thanks guys.
Anyway,
because Bugs Bunny was always making a wrong turn.
Yeah.
You mentioned Korax before. So Koloff is the main guy, and, you know, he's the one dealing with Kirk. He's the commander. But Korax, I think if you watch his performance very closely, you can see how he is the model for the portrayal of the quote-unquote modern Klingons from, like, TNG through, say, Enterprise, and maybe beyond, we'll see. He does that
beard and hair kind of.
The beard and gray, but the way he like grits his teeth and juts out his chin, and he's like, hey, you, and that very Shakespearean, you know, lowering his voice and being, you know, sort of being aggressive. Koloth is great, but he's a little bit more I don't know what the right term is, but, you know, theatrical. I don't know. He and Kirk work well together because they're both kind of playing off each other. But
yeah.
Koloth doesn't come across as a modern Klingon. Not exactly. Korax, really, if you put modern Klingon makeup on him, he would just be a Klingon.
Korax was played by somebody named Michael Pataki.
Yes.
And he was in a TNG.
He was.
A different sort of character.
I'm trying to remember.
The too late a season, something like that.
Too short a season. That's right.
Yeah, that one.
And I mean, a bunch of these guys have been on Star Trek. Like, we already mentioned William Campbell later is on Deep Space Nine. William Shatner, who we haven't even mentioned yet. William Shatner.
That guy was on a ton of TV.
He was the dad on Patty Duke, on the Patty Duke show, which if you haven't seen, you should check it out. Especially if you like shows about twins who are not twins, they're actually cousins through some weird. There's a genetic monstrosity going on.
Yeah, that show is something.
Patty Duke should basically be a sci-fi show because they're cousins, but they look exactly like each other.
Identical.
One of them's got an accent.
Cousins.
But anyway, he was the dad on that show. But he was on in this Trouble with Tribbles. He plays the undersecretary of something or other. I forget the full title, but on Deep Space Nine, he's in that episode Sanctuary, which is again about some aliens who come and want to chill in the station related to the wormhole, as was the guy who played Loomis, Leland Orser. We talked about him last week when we discussed the Enterprise episode, Carpenter Street. So Leland Orser from last week's episode was in the same episode as William Shatner on Deep Space Nine.
William Shatner was like on TV like up until like 2011 or something. He was on. He was a voice on the dinosaurs. Remember that show?
Oh no! You mean the terrible, the disturbing dinosaur show?
Which voice was he?
Some guy he was a We Say So scientist. He was also on that show. It didn't last very long. It was called The Torkelsons, and it had Brittany Murphy on it. She wasn't the lead, but it was like.
It sounds familiar.
He was a character on that show.
He was a character.
And then, like, if you name a show, like, he was on it pretty much. Like,
his name was Nils Barris. Nils Barris.
He was like that super mad character that was just always mad all the time about everything. Like at the beginning of I don't know if you remember the beginning of Ghostbusters 2. They were in the courtroom, and the judge was all, you know, berating them for destroying the town or whatever, and he keeps freaking out and he keeps like making his own blood pressure rise. He just keep going crazy, and they're trying to be like,
you might want to calm down. It's not healthy.
Because eventually it causes the ghost goop to manifest itself into danger ghosts. Right. So, and they were trying to like be like, calm down, man, chill out, you know? And so that's kind of what this guy's character played, was this sort of
guy stick that, up his ass.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, I'm sure.
Power hungry.
I'm sure it's the basis of all those deans in those college funny movies.
Absolutely.
But Kirk was awesome because he was just showing complete disdain, like
total dismissive attitude.
Yeah, he was like, "Fuck this guy," you know. So
I liked when William Shatner, or I should say Nils Barris, Undersecretary Nils Barris, would be in the process of yelling at Kirk, and you can tell from Shatner's performance that Kirk is not even paying any attention to him. It's not that he's even actively ignoring him. Kirk is just actually thinking about the problem at hand. One thing that comes to mind is when the famous iconic scene where Kirk is covered in tribbles.
Yeah.
And Barris is saying, you know, you've ruined everything.
That's the scene in particular.
And Kirk is looking off and he's not, I'm hesitant to give too much credit, but certainly the way I read it was that Shatner was really conveying to me that Kirk was thinking, okay, what's the deal? What's happened here? What exactly is going on? And then only like when he finished his thought was like, oh, this guy. Oh yeah. Don't worry. I'm still captain. So fuck you.
Yeah. Well, it was sort of, amplified by like that they kept throwing, like they were throwing, there was somebody throwing a tribble at a time, because things don't really fall like that. They kept hitting him in the head, and
somebody was making a squeaky noise for each one of those.
Yeah, and so he was just kind of like letting that slide too. But that was a fantastic scene. Somebody was kept going on.
Somebody was playing the music like.
Yeah, right. The sad fucking tribbles music.
I would be remiss if I did not mention that we get an explanation of why the tribbles keep coming down, and we'll keep that a secret for those who haven't seen it, because either next week or in a couple weeks, we're going to be talking about the Deep Space Nine Trials and Tribulations episode, in which the Deep Space Nine crew goes back in time and participates in this adventure. And so they provide an explanation in that episode as to why tribbles just keep getting chucked into William Shatner's head.
Yeah. I'm just imagining somebody up there doing it. I think there was people the way they opened the doors is people would just open and close the doors.
Like. Speaking of doors in the bar, why was that door designed to have a big piece jutting out the side? You know, when people are walking into the bar, two things that aggravated me were, first, Chekhov comes into the bar and just is standing in front of the doorway. Why would you stand in front of the doorway of a clearly busy establishment, presumably the only establishment on this small deep space station with nobody at it? And then when the door opens all the way, it's not like the door is not all gone. There's a triangle like sticking out, like kind of the remainder of the door, that's very awkward. And you got to imagine you're going to get your purse, you know, snagged on it. Or if you're walking by and the loop on your belt loop could tug on it.
Yeah.
Or you could just bump
that's
your hip.
That's going to happen to me.
You could get a bad bruise by bumping into that with
your hip.
Bruise.
Yeah.
I can't imagine Federation regulations would not have accounted for this. Anyway, maybe it's just me. If you're listening to this podcast, write in and let us know what you think about the door, the format of the doors on this particular space station. K7.
Golden age of science. Yeah, right. Can't even get the door right.
But yeah, I agree that William Shatner did a really great job playing that type of character who undermines his own mission effectively because he's treating Kirk like he's being such an asshole to Kirk.
What is he? He's the Federation Undersecretary in charge of agricultural affairs in this quadrant,
which is great. Fantastic.
But don't use like number emergency channels for something that you don't have to, you know? Even though like he's supposed to follow every order you give, doesn't mean you're like a dick and go overboard about it. It's like if you're in a restaurant and something and you just start throwing food on the ground, you know, it's like, oh, well, that someone's paid to clean that up. It's like, yeah. Well, you know,
it is an abuse of power.
Call somebody yeah. over.
It's an abuse of power, and it's a sort of a ridiculous abuse of power because you can rewind the scenario and Undersecretary of Federation Agriculture for this sector, Nils Barris, lights up subspace, calls Captain Kirk, hails the Enterprise, and says, yo, Captain Kirk, here's the deal.
Priority one.
We got this important shit going on. Can you help us develop? What is a plan? You can help us. Here's the deets. Let's work together and develop a plan, which is normally what you would expect to happen to some degree or another. Even if he was going to give Kirk some sort of command, which it doesn't appear he actually has the authority to do, right? You'd think the authority would go through some other route, right? He would have to call Kirk's commanders. He's not a military guy. He's not a Starfleet guy.
Because that admiral had to show up later and give, I mean, you know, with a transmission and give Kirk the orders. So like, yeah, you actually have to protect this space.
Which is like, why didn't he do that in the first place?
Yeah.
I just don't like seeing people in power abuse their positions for evil. Actually, it's not even evil. The cool part about the William Shatner character is that ultimately, presuming you are okay with the whole empire building and all that, he's working for the good of the Federation. His goals are not contrary to Kirk's own goals. It's his methodology and the way he went about it, which potentially imperils the situation, right?
Yeah. It's hard to say if he like had a preconceived notion of Kirk or if it was just like similarly to how Kirk was kind of like put out by this guy. He felt insulted by Kirk coming with the kind of an attitude. I don't know. But it seems
maybe he doesn't like Canadians.
Maybe that's it.
I mean, I know Kirk is from Iowa, but
yeah. Yeah, so there goes your theory.
All right, maybe he doesn't like Iowans.
Iowans.
Maybe he's so into fucking Quadro Triticale that he can't countenance a corn boy.
Yeah, he's got no place for corn.
He's like, Kirk is a corn boy, and he only likes hybrids of, what was it, wheat and rye, like a four-lobed hybrid of wheat and something.
Rye.
It was wheat and rye, I believe, right?
Yeah, because triticale is a real thing, and then this is just some kind of sci-fi. Quadro triticale. Yeah.
Four lobes.
When they were dying from eating the triticale, like, Bones comes out and says, I figured out how to keep him from splitting
up. He's all happy.
And he's like, just starve him, you know?
You just don't stop feeding him.
Yeah, you stop feeding. I mean, I don't know.
He's like waving a tribble around with like this grin on his face. Like, I figured it out.
Yeah, I don't know like what kind of brain buster that was. His brilliant plan.
I know.
There's a lot of conflicting stuff in here, which I don't think is a problem. In fact, I think it serves as an example to show this is one of, if not potentially the most classic episodes of Star Trek, the entire franchise. It's a well-known that even people who've never seen this episode understand the concept. And tribbles have shown up elsewhere in Star Trek, but only a couple times is the main thing. It's not like a number of other things in Star Trek that have gone on for years and evolved over time, right? People remember this episode. So it's okay to have an episode where things maybe don't all logically go correctly. If you're doing The Expanse or something, yeah, it's better to have it all make sense. But this in Star Trek, there's a different point going. They're telling a story. But it is fun to point out what doesn't quite work, as you did just now, Dan. The other thing was this whole business plan of Cyrano Jones. Presumably he knows the deal with Tribbles. I mean, I don't know. Maybe
yeah,
he doesn't.
He's
but
got to.
It's a weird business plan to sell something that produces exponentially.
Yeah. Yeah, they were talking. And, well, see, Spock was talking about it was taken out of its, you know, it's a
natural environments,
ecosystem, and all that.
Yeah, what do you think that's like?
Tons
of predators?
Yeah, I know. I was wondering what kind of ecosystem could keep all those tribbles in check and what those things look like.
Maybe they just live on asteroids or something.
Maybe tribbles only multiply if they eat carbs.
Maybe it's just carbs.
Maybe they're keto guys.
There was 1,771,561 of them.
According to Spock's estimate.
Yeah. And when he,
which I might quibble with, by the way.
Yeah, well, they said that's
quibble
assuming
with tribbles.
That's one. That's assuming one tribble multiplying with an average litter of 10, producing a new generation every 12 hours over a period of 3 days.
So Spock is half human, half Vulcan, as is pointed out often by humans, Vulcans, and Star Trek fans alike. I've often wondered, Spock has this gimmick where he does the whole calculation thing and he vocalizes or verbalizes, I should say, the entire, you know, set of things that leads to whatever his estimate's going to be. You know, the, we have a 5.75% chance of surviving this, Captain. Mm-hmm. He does that all the time. How much do you want to bet that his half-human side figured out long ago, perhaps even during the Pike days, that he doesn't have to be exactly right? That he can just talk some bullshit to these other humans that are going to be like, okay, Spock, okay. That's enough, Spock. We got it. And, you know, then he doesn't have to do the mental work.
He already cracks jokes and, like, makes snippy remarks. At McCoy, he made some kind of snippy remark when Spock keeps saying, like, the tribbles, you know, don't offer anything. Yeah. And then, you know, Uhura's like, they offer love. And, you know, and McCoy's just like, I like them. And then, like, Spock goes, basically says that you talk too much and you suck. but in a clever way. So they do have one redeeming characteristic. McCoy's like, well, what's that? They do not talk much. If you'll excuse me, sir.
My favorite part of the interaction between Spock and McCoy is when McCoy says, don't tell me you've got a feeling. And Spock says, don't be insulting, Doctor.
Yeah.
Jive at this point, but it's so good.
Yeah, yeah. So, Doyle
rules. Billy Madison.
The triple guy.
Oh, Cyrano Jones.
O'Doyle
is
O'Doyle's probably is the guy. Irish. Maybe he was Jones. The guy who was fighting with Scotty and Chekhov.
So he was told to clean up the tribbles on the space station,
that's another example of something that logically doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's 17.9 years. Because, like, even while they're not feeding him, they would find a way to get food and multiply without him ever catching up. Now, were they just playing a joke on him, or do you think Scotty transported the Tribbles out of the space station along with the Enterprise?
Yeah, I was thinking exactly that, because the only way I can interpret it in a way that is even reasonably realistic is that they're fucking with him, they're trolling him, mm-hmm. and he knows they're trolling him. He knows they're not going to have a space station be incapacitated for 17 years. I'm pretty sure somebody just couldn't get it. One of the writers, we've talked about this before, and we are all in the creative business. We all know when you have that idea that you just can't let go of, that creative idea that is so clever. And I think somebody got in their heads, they're like, all right, we'll say that his prison sentence will be 20 years. But if he cleans up all the tribbles, it'll only be 17 years. Oh, and we will have Spock at a decimal point, and that's going to be hilarious. I think they fell in love with that idea, despite the fact that it doesn't make any sense. The Federation's not going to just hobble the space station for two decades.
So one guy, is he working like 8-hour days, like every day for 17 years, like just clearing out the tribbles? Like,
and they got transporters. They got transporters on that space station. Presumably, they can. I know ships can transport the cargo, but the space station might want to transport cargo from time to time. I don't know. To be fair, that's an assumption.
How old is that guy? Does that guy even have 17 years left?
Yeah, I don't know.
The actor didn't even live 17 years after the show, I don't think.
Yeah, I think. Yeah,
it's a side story.
A lot of those side actors from that period, I think, didn't necessarily last so long.
Did you notice that Kirk spent all this effort trying to hold this tribble while he was opening the door that opened up millions of tribbles on his head? Mm-hmm. He had one in his hand and he was like trying to open, and then he switched hands with the tribble and kept trying to open it. It's like, why didn't you just hand it off? I thought that was funny.
There's a lot of pretty decent Shatner tribble puppeteering. Mm-hmm. It's not all great, but it's effective. So if we fast forward...
There was one tribble that was long on when he sat on one, but then the one after it was moving across the...
Mm-hmm.
The railing.
Like wiggling a little bit.
Yeah, and it was like it was a differently shaped Tribble. It wasn't a sphere.
Yeah.
It was like
some of them were a little more oblong.
They were walking. Sorry. You can
keep going. I was just going to say that in that scene towards the end of the episode when they discover Arndarvin.
Oh, Arndarvin.
Well, I don't think we've mentioned yet, but Arndarvin.
It was all that was just a walking by with the Tribble. Then the whole plot gets solved.
Walking
it's fine.
By with
it. It's
walking
fine.
On Tribbles. When you're watching that scene, you have to remember Kirk is wiggling those Tribbles. So when he walks up to the Klingons they all start doing that, and he's wiggling those Tribbles with his fingers. And then when he goes up to Arndarvin, they wiggle, and he's all threatening Arndarvin.
Yeah.
And it's great because Arndarvin is like, I've got nothing to say. And then Kirk just wiggles some Tribbles in his face. He's like, okay, I'll tell you everything.
Yeah, the Klingons really don't like friggin' Tribbles.
So if you haven't seen the episode or if you're so inclined, go back, check it out. Check out the Kirk puppeteering the Tribble scenes and the scene Dan was talking about where Kirk is sort of rearranging his personal Tribble back and forth in order to try to open that door. Because this goes to what you were saying, Jesse, about the shows being long and they add in these extra bits. The whole thing with Kirk going to the compartment, they've determined that there might be a problem with the Quadro Triticale. So Kirk goes to the compartment and he's like, we got to open that door. And they give him the little door opening thing and he's all like, bloop, bloop, and then he has to switch the Tribble around. And then it's like he's got to try harder or something. And it's a funny thing when you're thinking of technology.
Oh, what how he has to twist the metal thing?
Yeah. And it makes that little sound.
And it's like the one of them stuck. The other one's all easier.
Yeah, and then it's just the idea of having this super technological future and sort of having to wrestle around with it and making beeping noises while you're holding and a Tribble and while the actor is wiggling the Tribble in a certain way.
He should have put that Tribble down. He should have given it to someone else.
Yeah. I mean, there were plenty of people he could have handed it to.
Yeah.
The implication is he liked that particular Tribble. Attached to it,
or that it was just sort of a comical kind of like, forget that you don't care about this thing.
Do you think it's the Tribble he sat on and he found it? He found it later.
How did he not see that Tribble? But like before he sat down, that thing was huge. He like pulled it out. He's like, brr.
Yeah, I don't know how cute those things are. They kind of remind me of sea urchins.
Yeah, they're gross. They're all like big and meaty. Something.
They're meaty, furry sea urchins. They are meaty.
What do those things smell like? Jeez.
Yeah.
And their skin probably is all flaky.
Yeah.
Yeah, that furry, flaky skin.
Tribble allergies. Shit, man.
That guy was selling some kind of fire rocks or something.
Cyrano Jones. Yeah, fire gems.
Fire gems.
And what was the liquid he wanted to sell to the bartender? And the bartender was like, I use that to polish the fire gems.
It was some kind of
alcohol.
It was Antarian glow water.
Yeah, Antarian glow water.
Spike, and they polished the spike and flame gems, or just the flame gems.
Spike, flame gems.
I wanted to see some spike and flame gems.
I guess they had them strewn about. Chekhov at one point is sort of fiddling around with them, while you can see the Tribble kind of sneaking over to eat some of the spilled Quadro Triticale in the corner, which was cute.
Yeah. They were talking about some, I know that they were just, he was doing fake math, but when the shopkeeper bought his Tribble and was gonna resell it, he's like, 10% markup of 6 and blah, blah, blah,
I was annoyed by that.
10%. It's like, six plus 10% does not equal 10.
Yeah, that was.
Equals $6.60.
He
6.6.
Yeah, exactly.
he took Uhura for a fool.
Yeah, he really did.
I believe.
And 10% is not profit.
Did you think she was the first one to bring it on board, or that Doyle? that what's his name, dude? Galen? What's his name? The Tribble dude.
Cyrano. O'Doyle? Galen?
Galen O'Doyle.
I guess even if
you hankering for a trip to the Ireland or the British Isles? You just want to get over to Ireland?
What point do you think that the Tribbles? Like, who brought the Tribble over in the end? I guess it was, what's the name again?
Cyrano.
I guess it was Cyrano, but like...
He brought it to the station, but the ship...
Uhura was the first one, was really interested. Actually, the barman was probably the most interested, but she was the most, like, fawning over it.
Yeah, so Uhura, presumably Uhura was the one who first brought it over to the Enterprise. On the other hand, they were selling them at the bar, and other crew members were there, and presumably other crew members would want to buy a meaty, fat little living sack of flesh, a hairy sack of flesh.
When they went back for shore leave, like, Scotty was all resistant. Kirk goes, "Aren't you going on shore leave, Scotty?" He goes, "Why, no, sir." And then Kirk's like, "I want you to go on shore leave. Make sure everybody stays out of trouble." And Scott's just like, "But, Captain..." Why, sir, he's all pissed off.
Yeah.
And it's because he wanted to stay home and read his technical manuals.
Yes.
Because when he had that look earlier about reading technical manuals, it was like some kid playing a video game or something.
Yeah.
He was so psyched about him. And that's why, like, so after the brawl, so first of all, he made that situation worse because he started the brawl, which is bad enough. And then it's like, if it was over the captain, he would still be pissed, you know, it's fine. Yeah. He'd still be like, whatever, you shouldn't be fighting, blah, blah, blah. But it did it over the ship, which then suddenly does bring into the factor of, well, why wasn't it over me, man? You know?
Yes.
Because your own pride.
Kirk's feelings are definitely hurt in that situation.
Yeah, so he should have, he shouldn't have done that. And after he got punished, he should have done a better job acting like he wasn't being punished.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, he gets to read all his technical manuals.
He gets all excited, I know.
Which is what he wanted to do in the first place.
He wanted to be grounded. It's like if I grounded my child, my children to their rooms, they'd be like, that's great. That's where we are anyway.
Yeah.
The other thing with that scene, with the lineup scene, so there's the fight choreography, the fight scene, and it goes straight into the lineup scene, which is very funny. It's very interesting to see all the, you know, you don't see that often on Star Trek, you know, the people being dressed down by the captain in such a formal, militaristic way. So it was fun to see that. Did you notice they were playing like that Scottish music, sort of like a little bit of a hint of a Scottish music when it was coming to Scotty? And it's like a mildly racist sort of thing. Is like they've done that before. There was that episode on, I guess it's the Shore Leave episode, where they go down to that planet and they see like the White Rabbit and all this other stuff. And Kirk sees his old nemesis from Starfleet Academy, and I think he's an Irish guy. And they're playing this like leprechaun music. I mean, it's pretty offensive. But it was the 60s.
What about on TNG when they had the, you know, all those refugees.
The dirty Irish people.
Yeah.
That is often cited as an episode of, like, where people are like, what the fuck were they thinking? Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of, I mean, a couple of those season one, season two TNG episodes, you got to wonder. The 1980s, when they were writing that show, a lot of cocaine, a lot of other drugs, you know, alcohol and stuff going on. And I think some people just went crazy. And they, and I... I don't want to besmirch the writers of that TNG Irish episode, which I'm forgetting. The name is escaping me.
Something
up the long ladder. I think that's right. It's up the long ladder because it's got those other genetic people going on. It's hard not to think that they were like, you know what? We can't be racist against the people we like being racist against. So let's pick some group that we can just use the most offensive stereotypes possible and set it in the future. And that would be hilarious. That's not the case here. They were a little bit better in the 1960s. There was a bit of regression in the mid 1980s.
They sold out. Tribbles are bisexual.
Are they bisexual or are they heterosexual or are they hermaphroditic?
It seems more like hermaphroditic.
Bones specifically said bisexual.
I think he said. Oh yeah.
He said that.
That's a good reminder because I caught that too, and he must have meant hermaphroditic, and I'm guessing they were on the network executives at NBC said you can't say the word hermaphrodite.
Yeah, you have to say bisexual, which means something else completely.
They're going
to
be like, this is airing 4 days after Christmas. You can't say hermaphrodite. Say bisexual all you want.
It's a little fur creature.
Yeah, furry little testicle creature.
Yeah.
A warm little meaty testicle creature.
Yeah, it's weird they call it bisexual. It means...
It goes to show you that the term bisexual, presumably, we'd have to look this up, but presumably was... they were allowed to say it because it was so removed from people's experience. People were familiar with the quote-unquote confirmed bachelors and other euphemisms, but I guess bisexual was just so removed from the public conception of sexuality, bizarrely, that the network wouldn't be offended by it. This is all supposition on our part, but you know, we'll just assume we're right, I guess. Unless you write in and tell us that we're wrong. That is the power of the audience. It's a form of crowdsourcing. You can write in and correct us. And if you correct us, we will note that correction in some form or another, depending on how bad the correction makes us look.
Where will we put it?
Well, it depends on how bad the correction makes us look. It might be on the show. It might be on next week's episode. Right at the front. Right at the top of the episode. Or it might be something we kind of hide in our Facebook feed or something like that. But anyway, write in and let us know. Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. You can let us know. whatever the fuck I was referring to, you can write us and complain about it.
A good pun makes Kirk forget his worries.
Such as? I know what you're referring
to.
No triple at all. Wonderful ending.
Before they went into warp, I transported the whole kit and caboodle in their engine room. There'll be no triple at all.
There'll be no triple at all.
And there's like a little bit of a pause, and everybody's like, oh, look at you.
Yeah.
They start guffawing, laughing, and Kirk slaps Scotty on the belly. It is a wonderful ending to a show, and I think an example. We were having a conversation on Twitter with some other Star Trek Twitter folks about the quality of writing on TOS, and there's a lot of great writing throughout the whole Star Trek franchise, up to including the newer TV series, but TOS, those were people who knew how to structure a story for television.
Yeah.
Now, it could be a stupid story. It could be cheesy. The actors could be goofy. It doesn't mean it was great, but the actual structure of the stories were so tight. I mean, we talk about how they're longer episodes, so there's kind of extra stuff in there, but from the actual dialogue and how the story beats work out, all really, really, really tight, no matter how absurd the story. And I think this is a good example of that, where it has that great button at the end. It really like concludes the episode in a fun way. They don't always get there on the original series, but this is a really good, famous example of ending the episode strongly. Name, with a pat on the belly.
Name 10 that don't. I'm just kidding.
I can name another one that does. It sort of reminds me of when we already talked about where they're on the gangster planet, and then he's talking about like they're going to want a piece of our action.
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
that's right.
Or whatever he says.
Yeah,
I may have not gotten that right.
It's like, yeah, I forget. Yeah, no, but I know the one you're referring to, because Kirk starts getting all gangster. Kirk in that episode loved acting gangster. Mm-hmm. This episode he liked acting dismissive.
Yeah, he did.
Slightly goofy.
Yeah.
You know, just sort of.
First, we got to find Cyrano Jones. Second, we got to close that door.
I don't recall this any other time on the original series or any of the movies or in Star Trek Generations where I could be wrong again, but I this is the only time I could recollect Kirk having this weird tic where he says things twice. So he says, storage compartments, storage compartments.
Oh, yeah.
And then he's what? The what? Right. When they mentioned Quadra Triticale. And he seems completely, completely flummoxed.
Flummoxed.
He's flummoxed out of his fucking mind.
Or the lineup when he's talking and Chekhov says something like, "I no, sir, I don't know." And he's like, "No, sir, I don't know." And like he repeats it back all funny like that.
Yeah, there's
he's doing a bunch of funny, like just kind of funny things with his delivery, like even more so than usual.
And when you look at the lines, You see what Kirk adds to it. Well, Shatner, I should say, adds to it. Because, for example, there's the line where he says, you know, he's like, first, we're going to do this, this, and this, and this. And he's like, and second, someone close that door.
Yeah.
Because the tribbles are all falling on him. That's Shatner makes that line. And then the other line, for some reason, I don't know, it tickled me. Just the cadence of it, of Kirk saying, who put the tribbles in the Quadra Triticale?
Yeah, I wrote that too. And I was, that was a pretty awesome, that was a pretty awesome sort of beat he put together.
Or he gets the tribbles in the Quadra Triticale.
Yeah, he gets his food out of the replicator, and it's like just all tribble. He's like, my chicken sandwich and coffee. And he's like, picks up that cup.
And then he repeats it again. He's like, my chicken sandwich. They've gotten into the machinery.
That was like his tipping point right there.
Yeah, that's a nightmare, dude.
It is great that's what, like the other things, no problem, the overrunning the things, clearly a problem. As soon as he goes into McCoy's
replicator
lab.
Yeah, as soon as McCoy's lab, they replicate there, that they should have started thinking a big deal about that.
Terrified at that point.
Yeah,
it's like if you lift up the toilet and it's full of tribbles, and that's like even worse. And you're like, oh, holy man. Fuck.
What do I
Kirk now I can't sit turtles. Down on the toilet.
Chicken sandwich and coffee, right?
Was
yeah.
I mean, I can, you know, Janeway Janeway would be pissed if Tribble was sitting in her coffee. Yeah. The difference between Janeway and Kirk is Kirk put those down. Janeway would have found a way. She would have assumed the replicator had, like, you know, put the coffee around the Tribble and had soaked it up, and she'd be wringing that Tribble out.
There's coffee in here somewhere.
Janeway's not. She's gonna get her coffee when she wants it.
Cyrano Jones was a licensed asteroid locator and prospector.
He's a licensed asshole, is what he is.
Yeah, really.
He's one of those charming assholes that you don't want to have to really deal with, but you don't mind if you're in the same room with him.
Yeah,
you know,
he seems kind of. There's something about him, like, because even Kirk is not really put off by him at all. He's just more sees him as kind of like this, almost like a pest, but not. You'd think he'd be a little more angry at him about the Tribble situation.
You know what I think it is? I think it all comes back to what we were talking about before, which is Undersecretary Nils Barris being such an asshole that Kirk's attention was focused on that guy. Right. Normally, Kirk would be wanting to fuck up those Klingons, mm-hmm. and I think you're right. I think normally he'd be harassing Cyrano Jones, even if just for fun, even if he didn't think of him as that bad a guy. But because of Undersecretary Nils Barris being such a fucking cocksucker about this whole thing, Kirk was just all about doing whatever he could to fuck over that dude while still completing the mission that he saw that Nils Barris did not like Cyrano Jones, so he decided, I'm going to like Cyrano Jones. I'm going to defend him. Yeah. On the other hand, Spock also didn't seem to care that much about Cyrano Jones. He pointed out, he's like, look, this guy is just fucking tooling around. He's making a marginal living. That's Spock's polite way of saying this guy has kind of a shitty life.
If they had used like Harry Mudd for this episode, then they would have already been like, what's up with this? They would have been already suspicious, and it would have been a completely different dynamic.
There would have been a different vibe.
Yeah. So Kirk's pride was hurt a little bit then, in a way, that he had to like bow down to this dude.
I think I guess you could argue Kirk never bowed down to the dude,
But he had to follow directions.
But yeah, he had to, like, once the Admiral gave him the order, he was somewhat constrained in how much of an asshole he could be. And he seemed really delighted when he was able to be more of an asshole to the dude. Obviously, when Arn Darvin turns out to be revealed as a Klingon spy, the look on Kirk's face is just, he's so happy.
Yeah.
And he's not happy that he solved the mystery. He's happy that he can tell Undersecretary Nils Barris to go fuck himself. Yeah.
We never would have guessed he was a Klingon because he looks just like a human.
Yeah,
with his surgery. Luckily, that Tribble was there.
Just like those other Klingons. Luckily, look a lot like humans.
Luckily, Tribbles hate Klingons. You would have think that he would have crossed a Tribble earlier, but whatever. You would have thought, you know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Again, it's one of the inconsistencies in that there's the Tribbles and then there's not. You never hear of them before. They hear of them. You'd think you'd hear of this creature. Cyrano Jones either doesn't know that they reproduce or he has some scam, but he didn't do the scam right because the scam only works if you sell the thing and then you leave. Mm-hmm. And, you know, before they develop a reputation, because that's only going to, that gig is only going to last for a little while. So yeah, there are some inconsistencies there. However, there are also some interesting, not serialized points, but storyline continuity, which I think the stereotype of TOS is, and to an extent TNG, but certainly with TOS, the stereotype is that it was this purely episodic series and that you had the same characters, but basically each episode they're on an independent adventure and very rarely is there a connection between the two. That's really not true. They do have it. It's just not as strong as later series. And one example is they reference the Organian peace treaty between the Federation and the Klingons. And that refers to a prior episode, I believe, is Errand of Mercy, in which the Klingons and the Federation, you know, Starfleet, are basically fighting over this place, and there are a bunch of what appear to be, you know, very modest people living in this village. They don't appear to have any technology, and in the end, it turns out that those were, and in fact, a superior, quote unquote, superior advanced energy being race, and they enforce on the Federation and the Klingons. They're like, we don't like this violent stuff. So it's a very good episode, actually. And so they just basically make it so that the Federation and Klingons can't fight with each other effectively. And they enforce this peace treaty. And so I know it's only just a reference, but it does make sense. And it feeds into some of the motivations of what's going on here and why the whole Sherman's Planet thing is, you know, the way you win the war, the way you win the Cold War is by demonstrating your industry, you know, demonstrating that you can develop these colonies and utilize them and stuff. And again, I know that's, it's taken as a given that that's the good guy stance in the 1960s. And from the perspective of this show, modern folks may quibble a little bit with that being just assumed to be a good guy thing to do, to go and put colonies on planets. But we'll presume they're not taking anybody's land and they're not displacing any people or anything like that. But anyway, so that's an interesting connection to a prior TOS episode that adds in some of that character building, storyline building flavor.
Flavor taste.
Flavor.
All right. So I think we've covered most of the big chunks of the show. We will move along now. We will move along home to our odds and ends section. These are odds and ends, things that didn't fit into to the bulk of the conversation.
There was neat, the music when the tribbles were all over the bridge, there was sort of neat like piano music. It sounded like kind of all pentatonic and like sort of a muted piano kind of thing. It was very contrasting to the normal Star Trek soundscape.
They also had some of the jaunty music, the jovial, like, comedic music.
Yeah.
I liked when Kirk said at the beginning, he said, state the nature of your emergency. And it really sounded, my brain mapped it to state the nature of your medical emergency, like the EMH from Voyager.
When you were talking about the tribbles just now, wait, what were you just saying just now, Jesse?
The music related to the tribbles.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The music tribble music.
When they're on the bridge.
Didn't the tribble have like two kinds of music? There was cute tribble music, which was different from the cutesy music of normal Star Trek. But then there was also the when they started breeding, it was that. Maybe it was meant to sound like cats.
The tribbles falling, that was like that kind of squeaky.
Maybe it was meant to sound like cats in heat or something.
What
like
instruments
that.
Were there? Was there mostly strings involved there for that creepy music?
Some of it sounded like brass, and there was definitely strings. You need strings to get that sound and
the sort of harshness.
Brass
of
can
it.
Do that too. Make that kind of bendy.
Blap.
Bendy. Wham.
Blap.
Yeah.
Brass.
Brass.
Blap.
When he's talking to Scotty and Scotty's trying to tell the story and he's like, is this off the record? And he's like, no, this is not off the record.
Yeah, I like that too. He's like, no, you piece of shit. You've been a bad boy. a phrase, when Kirk is using the tribble, prior to using it to torture Arne Darvin. Oh, by the way, last week we had mentioned, in one of our marketing materials, we referred to Captain Archer torturing somebody and then taking him out for a burger. And, a couple guys on the Facebook wrote, I don't remember Archer torturing anybody. I just remember him, smacking the smirk off of some dumbass's face.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, different philosophies. Nice. Obviously, we were being somewhat facetious calling it torture, but he did have the guy tied to a chair. Then he punched him really hard.
I mean, how much time do you want them to waste on it before you decide it's torture? It's a show that there's certain implications involved.
And so I will again exaggerate somewhat by making a joke to say that Kirk is torturing Arne Darvin with the tribble. In a way, he kind of is. I mean, he gets a confession out of him.
It's advanced interrogation.
It is, tribble-based interrogation. But anyway, when he's doing that, right, he's going around and he goes to the Klingons and he goes to Undersecretary Nils Barris, and they, the tribbles obviously do not react because Nils Barris is a human or humanish, and Kirk says, they even like you, Mr. Barris. Well, there's no accounting for taste.
Oh.
And I use that phrase all the time, and often I don't even remember that it comes. It's not like this phrase only exists in this episode, but I guarantee you that's where I got it as a youth. As a ute, I got that phrase there. And that's a phrase I use all the time. And
I use the word ute all the time.
Another phrase I use a lot that's from this episode is referring to that last scene where Kirk is trying to figure out what happened to the Tribbles and nobody really wants to tell him. They're all being a little bit shy about what happened to the Tribbles.
Yeah, why are they so shy?
And he says, I don't want to interrupt this mutual admiration society. I use that all the time. I use that at work a lot. And that one I did forget came from this episode. And that's, again, I guarantee you, even if that phrase exists as a colloquialism, a common colloquialism, I got it from watching this TV show.
Let's not start sucking each other's dicks just yet.
So, yeah, and Kirk was all, you know, gruff and like, tell me now. Ah! And then when Scotty delivered his pun, Kirk, that's, you know, loosened him up. You know, he went from gruff to luff, laugh. Laugh.
Gruff to luff.
Larf.
Gruff to larf.
Larf.
And he's all, oh, you. Oh, you.
The what?
Kirk was talking. Kirk also talking to Fizzbang Mortalbop.
Cyrano Jones?
He was. No. The
Undersecretary Niels Barris?
Yeah. And Niels Barris accusing him of not taking it seriously. And he goes, like, on the contrary, sir, I think of this project as very important. It is you I take lightly.
Yeah. And what was it? He said, I had another phrase about, like, I've never presumed to know more than whatever. Something along those lines than any Federation official. And then he walks a couple steps and he's like, until now.
Yeah.
Kirk was just like, you are a piece of shit and I'm going to treat you like a piece of shit.
Totally.
Which I think you could definitely make a very strong argument that Kirk's behavior was somewhat unprofessional and may have in fact impacted the mission in negative ways because of his pride, as you noted, Dan, maybe some fear of his hurt pride or the potential to hurt his pride. But it was funny and charming and cute. And since we are positioned as the audience to cheer for Kirk and crew, I think it's okay for us to think of Undersecretary Niels Barris, who is the employer of Arn Darvin, as a, that he's kind of an asshole. Mm. And of course, Niels Barris, maybe if he paid closer attention to things, he would have realized that Arn Darvin was a Klingon in disguise.
Yeah, you'd think they would figure that out.
You'd think so.
But back then, Klingons looked so much like humans that you couldn't tell the difference. Mm.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, that's true.
You had to use the Tribble test. They didn't even know about the Tribble
test. Or you could just scan them. It's great when McCoy is all like, his blood is all right. It was like, his pulse. This man's a Klingon. It is fun to see the things that get smoothed out and later become standard tropes in Star Trek, like scanning somebody and be like, oh, they don't have human physiology. It's just taken for granted later. Here is where we're like introduced to that type of thing, and they don't quite have it right. McCoy was being a little overdramatic, if you ask me, but I guess it suited the story. So, any more odds and ends?
Not for me.
I don't think so.
Either odds or ends. Both are acceptable at this stage in the program.
Nope.
Not really. Lots of cool things like Denebian slime devil and Antarian bloodworm or something. Antarian.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
There's lots of little bits like that.
The Klingon insults are good. Yeah. I agree.
Regulan bloodworms. And then Kirk was tougher because he was a Denebian slime devil.
Yeah. And I was like, the Enterprise shouldn't be hauling garbage. It should be hauled away as garbage.
Or the scene where he walks in and Captain Koloth's there and he's like, my dear Captain Kirk.
Koloth was fun, but Korak's proper Klingon. Yeah. I mean, he's a real Klingon. Okay, so that's, that'll do it for us this week. Before we do the new, we want to keep doing tribbles. We want to keep doing tribbles. So next week, should we do the Deep Space Nine one, or do you want to do the TAS and Short Treks? What would you prefer, if you have a preference?
TAS and Short Trek.
All right.
Yeah, let's do that, because that sort of fits with the same era, supposedly.
So
yeah,
next week...
We did DS9 recently.
Yeah, we'll do the DS9 after that. We'll do a few weeks of Tribble stuff just for have some fun here and unwind mentally. It's been a rough couple of years. So next week...
4 years.
To prepare for the episode, watch the animated series, I believe it's episode 5, called More Trouble, More Tribbles. And that is it's a short episode. I mean, it's the appropriate length for the animated series. Watch that, and then also, if you have access to it, watch the short trek called "The Trouble with Edward," which is a Tribble centric short trek. It's not very long, and it stars
H. John Benjamin
of Bob's Burgers and Archer and Home Movies and other fame.
All sorts of stuff.
So that's what we'll be talking about next week. In the meantime, if you have any comments for this week, as we noted, you can write us in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. But our email box fills up with all sorts of emails, and that's great. But send us the personal stuff on emails. Send us the personal questions. If you really want to start a conversation,
personal pictures.
I think social media is the way to go. And Jesse, where can you find us on social media?
Facebook and Instagram at It's Got Star Trek.
There you go. That's right. At It's Got Star Trek, you'll find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Twitter, that's right.
Twitter's a good one.
Twitter.
Twitter in particular. There's all sorts of fun conversations and interactions going on, so definitely give us a follow there. We are also available on YouTube. We put up all the shows and highlights and some other bonus content on YouTube. It's all static imagery at this point because... you know, we're kind of busy people, but if you like getting your podcasts and other stuff through YouTube, definitely follow us there, subscribe there. Otherwise, you know, you're already listening to the show. So however you're listening to the show, just keep doing it that way. But we're legally obligated by the rule of the podcast manual to explain all this to you. So with that, we look forward to talking about More Trouble, More Tribbles and The Trouble with Edward next week. That'll be good night from all of us here at the It's Got Star Trek podcast. And we hope you have a lovely one.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Scott, you didn't transport them into space, did you?
Captain Kirk, that'd be inhuman.
Well, where are they?
I gave them a very good home, sir.
Where?
I gave them to the Klingons, sir.
Gave them to the Klingons?
Aye, sir. Before they went into warp, I transported the whole kit and caboodle into the air engine room, where there'll be no trouble at all.